Our last case this morning is 2016-260, Cincinnati Bar Association versus John Hauck. Mr. Hauck?
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, and you did pronounce the name correctly. I appreciate that. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes if I could. And I have to apologize to you that my appearance and my speech is not normal. I've had a serious operation which has affected part of my system, and I'm doing my best. I'm pro se. I'm going to read my script, but I know it's a lot of questions and answers, so I'll respond as you question me, but I want to begin by saying I'm very sorry for writing the letter dated March 3rd, 2014. It was done as a favor to a neighbor who lives up the street from my office in Milford. He was penniless and destitute and forlorn for his family. They had ostracized him years and years before that, but it was a mistake to have written the letter. The letter is marked Relator's Exhibit 4. The letter was an effort to reconcile the neighbor with his elderly parents, but the effort was not well received. Instead, as you know, the police were called. The neighbor was prosecuted for violating a civil protection order, and these disciplinary proceedings were taken against myself. The letter was written in an effort to be of assistance to a needy person, but instead it caused greater hardship for the neighbor. For this, I'm very sorry, and it's caused greater hardship through the whole system. I do take a lot of pro bono cases, and I have done a lot of free service to the community over the years, but I just thought sitting here that it's important to emphasize you don't take a pro bono case or representation when you don't know a thing about the law involving the case. I have never in the last 20 years practiced in domestic relations court. I had the faintest idea of how the system works.
Counsel, did you review the civil protection order?
No, I did not. I did not see it at all. And there's some confusion in that regard because the panel, based on a telephone call from the jail, figured, oh, Mr. Hauck must have seen it because the Mr. Ellison commented about, you know, didn't you know what was in the order, you know, that sort of thing. But I'd never seen it, never tried to see it. I had the misperception on top of that that domestic relations court was, records were confidential to only the parties and the attorneys involved in cases there. Now, I've been told since then that that's not true. Anybody can access an order if they really want to. But the point is, I tried to help the poor man, Mr. Ellison, and it backfired. Now, the whole process with Mr. Ellison started 12 years ago. He was a normal middle-class person, well-educated, an engineer, designer. Design engineer, but he had problems with his family. There was stress and friction, and he took it upon himself one day in 2004 to simply go to their house uninvited, remain there when they came, and would not let them leave for 3 hours, trying to talk with them in his own way. Now, he had mental issues to some extent himself. They didn't appreciate being held there in their own house for 3 hours, but when he left, they called the police, and he was charged. This is a regular middle class guy who works as a design engineer. He's charged with kidnapping and burglary. He had a public defender. Judge sent him to the penitentiary for 6 years, despite the parents saying, hey, give him counseling and let's put him on probation and try to help him. We all know there are different judges with different tendencies, and this particular judge said, I'm gonna put you in for 6 years.
Counsel, I wonder if we could talk more. I'm over here. I wonder if we could get maybe straight to what you would recommend in terms of a sanction.
Well, I'll be glad to get more to the point. It's hard for me to know how much you want me to go through these three legal issues. It's all in my. I wrote a 40-page brief.
That's all right. I think we can direct you to what we're interested in. I think what I'm most interested in is to hear what you would say about an appropriate sanction.
Well. And I'm glad to submit it on the brief without doing more than just answering your questions, which I'm glad to. I was suspended for first 6 months, and then a second 6 months about 3 or 4 years ago on a prior disciplinary case. I was suspended because I kept my, if any of you are Catholic, you may know who St. Francis of Assisi is. And I pride myself in my faith and emulating him to a certain extent, living without any more necessities than I need. But I kept my accounts in one bank account to minimize the service fees. Back then, they had the fees jacked up to 30 or 40 bucks per bad check. We were also being garnished by the state of Kentucky on withholding. They can garnish you right off the bat without even notice. So I figured we'd keep it in one account. That was a violation, 6 months. And then I tried to finish up a couple cases for my clients. You have a 30-day wind-up period. And I naively said, well, let me see if we can't get these two soft tissue injury cases out of here. They were negotiated and ready to settle. That was a violation in contempt. So they put another 6 months on me for trying to help those two guys. And then I said to myself, I don't know if I really want to be a lawyer.
They put the suspension on you for ignoring the dictates of your original suspension. They didn't put it on you for trying to help somebody. Let's not minimize that you disregarded an order.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I fully understand and I'm very penitent for doing that. In answer to Justice French's question, I just have a tendency to want to help people and do the best for them. You make mistakes. In my Christian viewpoint, I would forgive and go on with life. I would do a 6-month suspension. I would do something reasonable or give me community service. I mean,
are you opposed? The panel recommended a 1-year suspension with the condition that you undergo an evaluation with the Ohio Lawyers Assistance Program. Are you amenable to that?
Your Honor, I'm amenable to anything, but let's turn to psychiatrist Douglas Beach, and I assume you know him, he's here in town. The Bar Association recommended I see a psychiatrist for an evaluation. He found me totally competent. No cognitive disability, no alcohol or drug dependency, no reason whatsoever why I would have distraught thoughts to write a letter like this contrary to a CPO. What he did emphasize, though, was my Christian motivation, and all of them have attributed the error to the fact that my Christian spirit overwhelmed me and I disregarded the black and white law because I just felt the Christian motivation was stronger. It wasn't that. It was just lack of confidence.
So you would not be amenable. You would not want to go through an OLAP.
I don't want to waste the court's resources, but I'm amenable to whatever is mutually satisfactory. And I'm the one here at your service. I'm the one who's not dictating what happens here. But if they want to have me go back to Dr. Beach or anybody else, hire a panel of attorneys to interview me. I'm trying to emphasize that Beach really found nothing wrong. So what's going to be different in 2 years? I mean, there's a warehousing time. That's the way I look at this. Hey, let's warehouse Mr. Hauck for 2 years.
Are you admitting that you did practice law while you were under suspension?
I'm admitting that in the 30 days after receiving the call from the Supreme Court, the instructions to me to wind up your cases, notify your clients, and
you were advised that you were suspended, am I right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And
did you practice law under suspension? You admitted that, am I right about that?
I'm admitting that, yes. Justice O'Connor challenged me on that, and yes, it was wrong. It was improper to try to help these two guys get their cases settled and out of the way before I have to go on suspension.
Why should we treat you any differently then we treat the 40,000 other lawyers in Ohio when we tell them you may not practice law if you are suspended?
I fully understand, and I did serve a penalty of another 6 months for that mistake with those two clients. So I admit that it was wrong. I admit that I have to be cognizant. I'm so poor sometimes that I am late in re-registering my driver's license or my license tags. And I've learned the hard way in the computer age, you don't drive a car down the street, even if you're an attorney, with expired license tags. The lesson I've learned from all of this is you comply to the fullest with the black and white letter of the law. Whatever the Ohio law is on a given subject, you comply 100% or you're in extreme danger of being stopped for having a tag expired or for being trying to assist somebody down the street. So I am very conscious of that.
Mr. Hauck, when I first started reading this, it struck me as, before I came to your prior violations, and that impacts a bit on how we have to look at your situation now, but it struck me writing a letter to someone who wants to see if they can make peace with their estranged parents, and what I read indicated the guy didn't even know that his stepfather was deceased when you're talking about this letter. Seemed like a not unreasonable thing to do until we can come to the part that says no contact through intermediaries as well. That seems perhaps a bit extreme in terms of the court order, but that was the court order. So, so as I'm reading this, I'm still pretty sympathetic to your plight here. Until I get to the part that this guy you tried to help gets prosecuted, and you end up in a situation where you have to get immunity and testify against him in court. Now you've really gotten yourself sort of into the soup, and we can't be wanting to see lawyers put themselves in situations where they have to get immunity from a prosecutor for something they've done so that they can testify against another person who wasn't, I guess, your client. He was a friend. But that now you've put yourself in a pretty bad situation, so I want to bring you back. I'm hoping I'm helping you understand our difficulty. And Justice French came to the real dilemma that we have to discuss is what is the right penalty? What is the right sanction? I don't even want to call it a penalty. What's the right sanction here, given everything that's transpired? You haven't really helped us very much with that.
I appreciate your thinking, Justice Pfeiffer, and the last thing I intended to do was to come across as argumentative or...
No, you weren't, but so far you aren't real helpful either in terms of what is it you think would be the right sanction.
Well, let me be very honest. I've got 30 seconds. Let me be very honest. I've debated over and over, am I a properly fit attorney that can comply with all the rules and do the right thing, or should I be a social worker? When I was out of law before, I was helping developmentally disabled people. I worked for Starfire. It's a group that takes them in the community. So I'm debating that myself, what's appropriate. The reason I've carried this case this far, all the way here to you all, is because as an attorney, I see three statutory and constitutional issues that will affect lawyers statewide, not to mention all the citizens in the state, and they're in my brief. I'm not going to get into them here. I've got 15 seconds left. But I brought these legal matters to your attention in the brief, thinking that even if I go down with the ship, if I have to sit out for 2 years and go and be a social worker, maybe the law can be improved for others so they don't fall in the same dilemma. What you do with me is, it depends on how much sympathy and empathy you have with my situation.
Well, our job is to protect the public from, we want lawyers who are not harming the public. And when you get into a situation where you end up testifying against somebody you tried to help, where you're helping the prosecutor put that guy back in prison.
Well, I did take the Fifth Amendment.
What?
I did take the Fifth Amendment.
Okay.
But your writing the letter resulted in Mr. Ellison receiving 90 days in jail.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so you didn't need to testify against him in order to get for him to get the 90 days
in
jail.
They had him they had sufficient proof from his own admissions and other evidence to be able to find him guilty without my testimony.
Exactly.
So I did not contribute to actually testifying.
Right. You didn't contribute. You didn't. Yeah, I understand that. But you know, writing a letter that's going to get your client slash friend 90 days in jail.
I think my thinking was distorted from having been out of law for 16 months, having come back from doing social type things.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that the value system that you employ is conducive to the practice of law. And I'm not the only one that thinks that way. I think that based on what the panel and the board reviewed, that's why they're saying you need, as a condition of whatever we do here, an OLAP contract. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a substance abuse problem. That's not what, you know, that's not exclusively for people with substance abuse problems. It is a method or a tool to help you maybe come to some realizations about your future.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. So I'm out of time, I assume, here.
Pardon me?
I assume I'm out of time looking at this.
Well, you got 38 seconds, but go ahead.
Well, let me just submit the legal issues to you in the brief. Let me ask for your sympathy and empathy in that you've got lawyers of all kinds out there, some who try to help their friends and clients in different ways. I've learned the hard way that the black and white of the law must come first. There's no question about that. So whatever groups I go through and counsel with, I'm glad to comply and to remember.
You know
remember
what the recommendation
rule
is for an indefinite suspension, correct?
Yes, that's 2 years at least, yes.
Yes, right.
Right, that's a serious suspension, yes.
Plus the condition of, you know, engaging in OLAP, correct?
I'm not familiar with how it works, but yes, that's a condition I understand, yes.
Okay. And instead of an indefinite suspension, what do you think, what's your argument here? What type of sanction?
My argument, briefly, is that I've been, in my first suspension, I had judges, clients, the whole world writing letters for me on my behalf in mitigation. I didn't want to go through that again the second time around. With all the clients, I've helped immense number of clients. I'm an excellent attorney. Look at the brief. I've got skills to write briefs like that. I've got the skills, the talent, the successful outcomes for clients. All of that has been 100% successful for the last 40 years.
Are you a solo practitioner?
Yes, I've been a solo practitioner. When I got out of law school, I had inherited wealth. I used it in the inner city of Cincinnati. I bought a house. I lived in the inner city. It's called Over the Rhine. You've heard all about it up here by now. It's like your German village, although we're even more successful down there. And I lived there. I developed property. I brought the neighborhoods together with community meetings and things. I was a community leader. I did lots of things besides just be a strict lawyer. So I've done a tremendous amount of things through my career. I have not presented those things in mitigation. I don't know whether it's appropriate to stay a lawyer or not, but I'll trust your judgment that if you want a quality person like this who now knows to follow the black and white law, I will do so. And I'll go through meetings and reviews and programs if you want. My suggestion for a sanction then is no suspension, but go through OLAP, go through Dr. Beach again, whatever oversight you want to provide, have me check in, counsel with somebody over a period of 6, 12, 18 months to make sure that I'm taking cases that I know the law in. I'm not misleading clients or other people by being too good and too unthoughtful about the consequences. The key to being a good lawyer is knowing the consequences of what you do. And obviously, I neglected that in this particular case.
Thank you. All right. Counsel?
Chief Justice O'Connor, may I please the court. I'm Richard Goldberg on behalf of the Cincinnati Bar Association this morning. I'm going to address the sanction question that the court has, if I can hold off on that for one moment. But Mr. Houck's professional misconduct resulted directly in the Lees being victimized by the violation of the civil protection order. It also resulted in Mr. Ellison, his client or friend, being arrested, prosecuted, and convicted and spending 90 days in jail, all of which was unnecessary, all of which was totally avoidable. In fact, Mr. Ellison testified at the hearing that had Mr. Houck advised him not to send the letter, he would absolutely have listened to his advice. So I think it's important to know a little bit of background here, and again, I will get to the sanctions, but back in 2004, Mrs. Lee was elderly. She was 78 years old. She's Mr. Ellison's mother. And this was not a visit by Mr. Ellison to his estranged parents' home. This was an invasion. He came to the house through an unlocked garage by deceit, waited for them to come home, brought in duct tape, a change of clothing, a hammer, and two pairs of handcuffs. And he proceeded to commit an assault against Mr. Lee, which resulted in bleeding and abrasions.
But counsel?
Yes, sir.
While that's very helpful, that's not really why we're here today, is it? It seems to me that the lawyer was approached by a friend and said, well, I'm not allowed to talk to my parents for 5 years. Do you think we could shorten it up to 4 years? Unbeknownst to them, one of them was already dead, correct?
Correct. Mr. Lee had passed away.
Are you telling me that we can't call this an error?
It's a grievous error, as Mr. Houck has admitted to before mm-hmm. the panel. The letter itself, which is part of the record, is not just a pleasant, hey, let's reconcile the family. The letter goes on to talk about accusing the Lees of quit victimizing me or your son. It talks about a family war. The war must end. And the letter is 4 pages long. It's just not a nice letter. It was very accusatory in placing blame on the Lees. And this is a letter that Mr. Houck and Mr. Ellison collaborated on.
And the representation is that Mr. Houck did not know the contents of the CPO. And he wrote this letter merely based on the representations of his friend, Mr. Ellison. And there is some contradictory evidence that was considered by both the panel and the board, including, I guess, a recorded conversation?
A jail call.
That would lend you to believe that he, in fact, did review the CPO and knew its contents.
And I think that's what the panel found, that he knew based on this jail call when Mr. Ellison said to Mr. Houck over the phone, you've reviewed the order, haven't you? And Mr. Houck's response was, well, let's not get into the technicalities or legalities of it. He kind of like shrugged it off. It doesn't matter whether he was aware of it or not in our position, because we feel he had a duty to read it.
Correct. And
Mr. Houck claims that he doesn't practice as a domestic relations right. civil protection order. He doesn't do domestic relations law. However, he practices criminal defense. We all know what a restraining order is. We all should know what a civil protection order is as attorneys. And if he wasn't sure, he had a duty to investigate it.
And he admits that he's done, you know, that he did not act professionally. He failed at that responsibility. You know, the question I have is whether he fully grasps and admits it. But you know, that's another question. But the panel recommends 12 months out with conditions. And then the board jumps it up to one penalty short of a disbarment, which is an indefinite suspension plus conditions plus, and I think both the panel and the board would say costs here, which are approaching $15,000. All right, so can you explain to me how the panel goes to 12 months and the board bumps it up to an indefinite?
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
When we went into this hearing, it was our request for the board or the panel to impose a one-year term suspension with conditions, OLAP mental health. Our concern is since that time, and just looking at the objections that Mr. Houck has filed pro se, he's really not accepting responsibility here in our view. We're concerned that he doesn't grasp the seriousness of what happened here, the consequences of the letter, and his own statement, page 4, He claims he hasn't handled the CPO case yet. Within the last year or two of the hearing before the panel, he defended somebody charged with violating a civil protection order in a criminal case, and he won an acquittal for that person. So to claim that he's not familiar with DRCPOs is really not borne out by the facts and by his own representation in that case. He claims he still claims to this day in his objections he had no duty to investigate the CPO. Yet he's going to write a letter. The proper procedure would not have been in the letter to ask the Lees to file a motion to terminate the CPO. It would have been for Mr. Houck to file a motion with the court to terminate the CPO.
But counsel, I guess that's where I'm glad you're responding to the chief. You represent the Cincinnati Bar, so you've had this case from the beginning, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you, I presume, succeeded at the panel level when you got a one-year suspension, and your organization at that point was satisfied?
Well, the decision comes with the board's recommendation at the same time.
No, I understand that, but when the panel decided to recommend to the board, 1 year, and then there's a hearing, correct?
That's correct.
And I guess what I'm asking is, when did the Cincinnati Bar decide that you want an in-def rather than a 1 year?
After the board recommendation, but more importantly, after he filed his objections pro se.
Okay.
With these factors that caused us alarm that he hasn't grasped the extra year that the indefinite.
I was trying to figure out the mechanism here. Now I get it.
And I also should point out, he references the burglary of the Lees as a visit. This was a felony which ended up in a 6-year prison sentence. He mischaracterizes that crime, a serious crime, as a visit to this day. And that's we're concerned about that. We're concerned about him giving legal advice if that's how he characterizes a serious felony. And last but not least, he says in the very end of his objections, he says Dr. Beach's report was not useful. Well, we feel Dr. Beach's report was very useful because Dr. Beach states that he has features of a personality disorder, and those features at times cause him to pay more emphasis on religious and spiritual things than practicing the legal way. So we are concerned that he's shrugging off Dr. Beach's recommendation. Even this morning, he doesn't know what OLAP is. We think there definitely needs to be a monitored mental health issue upon reinstatement. We definitely think the indefinite suspension, based upon what we know now, is appropriate in order to protect the public.
Does your bar association provide monitors for people who are returning to the practice of law?
We do. We think this needs more than a practice monitor. We think this requires the mental health counseling. During the term of a suspension, we believe he needs mental health counseling during the term of the suspension, and then on a petition for reinstatement to be evaluated by this court, depending on the reporting we get back from the mental health professional along the way.
And what about returning to the practice? Would there be some ability to oversee the practice?
If that's what this court feels is appropriate, it's not what the board recommended. The board simply recommended the OLAP mental health follow-up.
Thank you.
But our concern is we don't think that he's fully accepted and grasped the seriousness of the harm that's happened here. This poor judgment is concerning to us, and his deep spiritual and religious beliefs, as the panel said, are laudable, but not when they interfere with good professional judgment in the practice of law.
And what is the recommendation you have for the court as terms of a punishment?
We will concur in the recommendation of the full board for an indefinite suspension with OLAP monitoring on a mental health basis. That's our recommendation. We're comfortable that there's ample evidence to support that, both by the record and the facts and the cases. There are a couple of cases that I think we cited in our response that talk about violations of, it's not that common a situation, but where attorneys were involved in violating protection orders, and there were both shorter term suspensions, but term suspensions. In one of the cases, Akron Bar versus Markovich, there were no previous disciplines. And there are no mental health issues in those cases either. So that's why we believe the recommendation is appropriate in this case. The criminal case, there are some other issues with the criminal case that I think that exemplify poor judgment also. Mr. Houck, all this during this period of time during the criminal case, Mr. Houck was not registered, by the way. And we understand that for somehow he was not notified that the registration had expired, but there is still some obligation on an attorney to make sure the biennial registration is complied with. But during the criminal case, although he claimed
in the letter, he has a disclaimer saying, I'm not acting here as an attorney, I'm his friend.
That's problematic to us as well, because he and Mr. Ellison created an attorney letterhead because they knew, or Mr. Ellison knew, his parents would not open a letter if it came from him.
And I understand that, but he was suspended when he sent this letter to Mrs. Lee, correct?
I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to look at the timeline.
Okay, all right. I thought
Mr. Goldberg, what is Mr. Houck doing at the present time, to your knowledge?
Mr. Houck is practicing.
And what type of practice?
Mr. Houck, he's a criminal defense, and I think he does some personal injury practice. During the criminal case, while he claimed that he wasn't representing Mr. Ellison, he sort of interfered with the relationship with Mr. Ellison and Mr. Ellison's attorney. Mr. Ellison had a court-appointed attorney, a public defender. And some of the jail calls, Mr. Houck says to Mr. Ellison, your public defender did a very poor job. Things like that. Things that are not very professional, not helpful for Mr. Ellison, and certainly not for his defense. While not registered and while not as an attorney for Mr. Ellison, he used his attorney card to get into the jail where he can have a face-to-face visit. You can't do that if you're not an attorney. So he gained entry, holding himself out as the attorney for Mr. Ellison when he really wasn't. And he kind of messed around with the relationship between Mr. Ellison and his court-appointed counsel, who also testified before the panel as well. An assistant prosecutor testified before the panel that, in her opinion, Mr. Houck could have been charged with complicity in the violation of the protective order. And when they sought Mr. Houck's testimony, because the concern of the prosecution was they were more interested in convicting Ellison, and because Mr. Houck had signed the letter with his letterhead, although with disclaimers that I'm not acting as an attorney, they thought they had to give up Mr. Houck to get to Ellison. So they wanted Houck to testify against Ellison. Houck took the fifth. Houck was given immunity. They was given immunity by a common pleas judge. And Ellison ended up working out a plea and served 90 days or upwards of 90 days in jail. If the panel has no further questions, I will conclude.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Houck, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you so much, Your Honor. A couple things. The allegation that I'm not impressed with the seriousness of this matter. I'm extremely impressed with what Mr. Ellison has had to go through for the last 10 or 12 years. And all my life has been devoted to helping people of that sort. So I'm very, very impressed with the seriousness of his situation and the consequences to the whole civil justice system. Second of all, I think my credibility is the real issue here. They're doing a great job of attacking me on all kinds of fronts, showing lack of credibility, including the previous criminal case involving a stay-away order that I handled, and they brought that into evidence as an exhibit. There was a man I represented who came and hit his ex-wife and was charged with a violation. It was such an obvious offense of hitting your ex-wife that you didn't have to look at all the papers. I came in late and replaced the public defender, got him on probation, a new stay-away order. That's the kind of thing I do in criminal cases. You get him on probation and do a new stay-away order. So the credibility is difficult to enhance when there's mistakes I've made and things, events that have happened on a number of different levels here that all question one's credibility. I think I'll conclude here by saying that I made statements that's in the record that I'm from Mars and a different wavelength than the rest of the bar. Well, you know, that hurts me to say that, but maybe that's my situation. So the mental health, the last thing I'll say is that if mental health counseling will help, I will definitely positively go through it. I've got stress at home because we're poor. I've got kids I'm raising still. So there's financial stress. There's different things going on here. By the way, having a disciplinary action against you on the internet, that alone, now being on the internet, it's like that first case you had involving the internet. That alone is a damaging thing to an attorney that drives away business for a long time to come. So there are all kinds of penalties that I've incurred here, but I'll do the mental health counseling, gladly cooperate.
Counsel, when you were suspended before, you mentioned that you were working as a social worker.
I helped a group called Starfire. I was paid as a staff member to take people with developmental disabilities out on events and things of that sort, yes.
Okay, so you do have the ability to be employed in a different area, not as a lawyer, but in the mental health or mental retardation community.
I found it very hard to obtain any real substantive work. It was a minimal wage job with a handicap, age, lack of any real work experience outside of law. It's very difficult just to get another job, but I'll obviously have to try if that's what I do.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.